You're listening to Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
What up, what up, what up, Raider Nation? Eddie Pascal, producer Trav, Upon Further Review. Week 14, right? Yeah. What a time. What a world. Well, before we get into it, and I just want to do a quick shout-out to a new friend of ours, Reagan Herrick. We met him during the game, or pregame, I should say, on Sunday. He hollered at Trav and I. He said he listens to the podcast. Came all the way out from Montana. So my man Reagan, shout-out to you. Keep listening. And we appreciate all you guys that listen. I know that the season has been a dark one. There has not been a lot of light surrounding the mighty Oakland Raiders this year. But we're still having fun. We're still talking football. This is better than a real job. So we appreciate you guys chilling with us, hanging out, and just know that we read all your comments, the good ones and the bad ones, and we appreciate you because there's no us without you. So anyways, thanks, guys. That was pretty chill. Anyways, let's go back to Sunday for a brief second because, believe it or not, I was actually pretty pleased with the effort of the Silver and Black Sunday, especially considering you fall down 13-0 literally in what seemed about 5 minutes, and against a high-flying offense like Pat Mahomes and the mighty Chiefs. I mean, it's for a team that was 2-9 at the time with really nothing but pride to play for, and the Chiefs still trying to secure a number one seed and all that jazz. I think there was a second there where collectively we were like, oh boy, this could get nasty. This could get real dirt nasty. But thankfully, it wasn't the case. And I think that showed a lot about the resolve of this team in 2018. Like I said, down 2 scores early, but fought back. Did not let the Chiefs run away with this game. In fact, you take away those couple fumbles, and I know that we're playing the woulda, coulda, shoulda game, but you hold on the ball a little bit better. You convert an onside kick, which I know is a lot easier said than done. But, I mean, the Raiders had a chance at this game. They had a chance to tie this game in the final seconds. And against a team that is widely regarded as the best in the AFC, if not one of the top two best teams, a team that a lot of people think have the ability to make a sizable postseason run. I mean, to go toe-to-toe with these guys, to go toe-to-toe with Mahomes, to keep Tyreek Hill to one catch, to limit him to one catch and not make him a game-wrecker kind of dude, I mean, you got to feel good about that. And I know that I'm kind of preaching the moral victories, even though there are no such thing. I mean, you have to feel good about what this team did. I mean, just going through the stat lines for a brief second, 171 yards on the ground again. I mean, the past month or so, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a team in the NFL that's running the ball harder and more effectively than the Raiders. 28 attempts, a great number on the ground, 171 yards, averaging 6 yards a pop. I mean, that's in a lot of games, and I know the Chiefs are a bit of an outlier, but if you play a lot of teams and you run for 6 yards a pop for 28 times, I mean, that's a pretty good recipe for victory. In terms of passing the ball, we kind of got a resurgent Derek Carr, 29 of 38, 285, 3 TDs, no interceptions, quarterback rating of 123.2. I mean, that's – I know that it was a losing effort. I know that. I get that. But, I mean, come on. Offensively, that's what you want to see. And I think that collectively, that's what we've wanted to see a lot of this year. You know, we've wanted to see this offense kind of be the high-flying, dynamic offense that we all anticipated it would be in 2018. And, you know, we've seen it for bits and spurts here. We've seen it for a quarter here, a drive there, a half here. But we haven't really seen it for a full 60 minutes. And I think that in kind of thinking back on the game and looking back on this year, I think that Sunday was probably the closest we've come to a full 60-minute effort on the offensive side of the ball. And defensively, I know that Mahomes is a beast. Mahomes is a magician. My goodness, the arm talent on this young fella. Mamma mia. But, I mean, the Raiders did a pretty darn good job. I mean, obviously, he missed a couple throws. I mean, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, there's three or four. You're like, all right, if he, you know, wrangles that one in a little bit more, he puts a little more air on that one. I mean, we're probably singing a different tune, but I mean, Mahomes goes 295, 4 touchdowns, obviously, you know, kind of the story of the game, but he very much looked like the dynamic kind of MVP caliber dude that he's been in 2018. I mean, you look at some of these throws. Whew. As our guy Kyle, who will join us later, I mean, he has been the biggest kind of Mahomes supporter throughout 2018, and it's been kind of a running joke between us. I was like, I don't know if I buy it, bro. Like, I don't know. But seeing him live, seeing what he does with the flick of the wrist, dude's a problem. Dude is a problem. But, you know, that's in the past. We'll see him again in a couple weeks in Kansas City, which will be a really fun game. It'll be a cold weather game to wrap up the 2018 season, a game where the Raiders have a chance to play spoiler. I mean, if things kind of go the way that they're trending, I mean, the Chiefs are going to need that win to secure a number one seed. They're going to be playing their guys, and the Raiders have a chance to go in there and smack someone in the mouth and say, not on our watch today, fellas. And I don't know, I'm excited, but enough about that. Let's move on. Before we really get into this week and everything coming up here, it's time for producer Trav and I's favorite segment, Housekeeping. Also still looking for a sponsor, looking at you, Suavecito. But here we are. Since we last spoke, I'm going to take a deep breath. Producer T-Bone is locked in because we got a lot to get to. Since we last spoke last week, let's might as well just rattle them off, huh, Trav? Here we go. We've signed Montrell Meander, put Leon Hall in IR. Big Jelly was activated to the 53. We waived Denver Kirkland. We claimed the great Denzel Good, waived Ian Silberman. We signed old friend DeMontre Moore, waived Fadal. We've signed CJ Anderson, Bene Benwickery, and brought Coney Ealy back. And in corresponding moves, put Martavis, Bryant, Shalik, and Reggie Nelson on IR. Donald Penn also returned to practice, so technically a transaction, not an addition to 53, but Big D Penn came back to the 53. Hopefully we get him back. But man, that's a lot. That is a lot of stuff to keep track of. But I think it kind of just shows that, oh man, one, the Raiders are beat up a little bit, which I don't think is, you know, a surprise. I think every team in the NFL at this juncture, four games left on the schedule, I mean, you're dealing with it, man. You're in it. You're grinding. And I mean, the stuff that these dudes put their body through to get ready for game day is unreal. And I think that it's catching up to some of the silver and black a little bit. But I think what it also shows too is like we've talked about before, a commitment to, even with four games left, with the postseason not in the picture, with, you know, obviously you're kind of playing the games out for the sake of playing or not at this point, that Coach Gruden and Reggie really committed to finding the best 53. I think that at this juncture, what I really see down this final four is a lot of opportunity for guys. You know, you have an opportunity for a guy like Marcel Aitman. CJ Anderson, who we'll get to in a little bit too, a guy with a great opportunity to make some noise for his hometown team over the final month, put some good film on tape. Maybe he sticks around next year, maybe not. I mean, TBD, but there's chances. There are chances. There are jobs to be won over this final month. And realistically, I think that's the main thing I'm looking for. Obviously, I'd like to see a couple wins as we come down the stretch here. But the reality of it is look, guys are fighting for jobs. You know, this is what we're kind of doing. We're looking ahead to 2019 a little bit. We're looking ahead to see what is this team going to be made up of in 2019 and beyond as we get ready for the next chapter of this organization's history. And who's part of that? Who wants to earn a spot to be part of that? Who wants to be part of the greatness, of the return, of the creation of a new greatness, Travis? Who wants to be part of that? And I think we're going to find out a lot about that in the coming months, or month, I should say. Speaking of greatness, a guy who, I mean, let's be real, has been great this year. 9 of 10, I believe. Let me check my high-level notes here. Yeah, a guy who's been 9 of 10, hasn't missed a field goal in about a month. A man who we picked up from the mighty Minnesota Vikings after they parted ways with him. But man, a dude who's been money, Daniel Carlson. He's been really good. I think you look over what he's done since joining the Raiders, obviously statistically stellar, but I think more importantly than just the statistics of it all and doing his job, he's provided a little stability in a position that this team desperately needed stability in. I mean, you look 18 months ago, Travi, and Seabass has been the guy here for 15 years, and it's incredible to think that in that time, in the past 9 months, really, we go from Giorgio Tavecchio, who, shout out to Giorgio, is doing great things in Atlanta. So shout out to Giorgio. Blessings to George. You go from Giorgio to Eddie Pinheiro to Mike Nugent to Matt McCrane to now Daniel Carlson. And man, that's a lot of kickers, bro. That is a lot of kickers. And, you know, as our resident special teams advocate, I feel obliged to say that consistency is really the name of the game in special teams. And the Raiders just haven't had it. And Daniel Carlson has provided some much-needed consistency. And Coach Gruden gave him a pretty ringing endorsement after the game on Sunday after he knocked in his career 50-yarder. So it's been good to see. It's been an exciting development. I'm really excited to see what he does over these final 4 weeks. But Daniel, quite an introduction for old Daniel Carlson here. Daniel, before we get into the 9 of 10 and all that stuff, and we'll talk about it, I'm curious. You look at the way that Sunday night football game ended with the Chargers and the Steelers and the Chargers kicker having to hit three kicks in a row, three game-winning kicks. What's the craziest kicking situation you found yourself in?
I mean, that was, I was actually watching it on TV. I went to dinner late that night with my wife, and so I was watching it. And it is crazy. You know, obviously three offsides by the defense. So he got a chance and chance and chance. And each one was kind of different. You know, he missed the first one, second one was blocked, and finally he made the third one, which was good. But, I mean, I've never experienced something like that. You know, hopefully I don't have to. Hopefully I can just make the first one and be done with it. But, you know, it's a crazy situation and a lot of close NFL games. So a lot of games come down to that final kick.
As a kicker, does that rattle you? Does it throw you off your routine, your mojo, to have to do it once and then twice and then the third time?
I think so. You know, I think it's just not normal to be out there. You know, sometimes they call a timeout and sometimes you're prepared for that. But, you know, the whole theory of icing the kicker, you know, I don't really know if it works. I don't think it ever has affected me. And I think it gives you more time to just kind of collect yourself and collect your thoughts. You know, but it is interesting, and you know, those NFL coaches are going to do anything they can to try and, you know, rattle you a little as a kicker.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the icing stuff, because I thought about that before, where it seems like, and I don't have any stats to like back mm-hmm. this up, but it seems like every time that, whether it's at the end of the half or end of the game or whatever, when the coach calls the timeout, I feel like it almost has the opposite effect, because the kickers are now expecting it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just like, all right, let me line up, do my thing. Oh, shocker, here comes the timeout. And then you just kind of reset your routine.
It's, you know, I wish they would show some stats. I would love to see that. But, you know, I think there's a lot of times where, you know, they'll kick it, but they would have called a timeout and they miss a kick, and then the next one they make it. So, you know, it's hard to say what the coach should do in those situations, but as a kicker, you know, you kind of just have to block out all that noise. And you know, you get used to that. You play in front of a lot of crowds on the road. You know, even at home, you have all that pressure every kick. And so, yeah, you get practice blocking out that noise, whether it's end of half, end of a game, or just, you know, regular kick in the first quarter.
So it's been a pretty crazy year for you. I mean, you think back, you know, 9-10 months ago, you're kicking at Auburn. But I'm curious, how does a dude from Colorado end up making it down to Alabama and kicking at Auburn?
Yeah, my parents actually went to Alabama, University of Alabama.
Oh,
yeah, so
no.
I was
and your brother
traitor.
Goes to Auburn too, right?
My little brother went to Auburn. He's kicking there right now. And so, yeah, I was kind of the first one to be the traitor and go to Auburn. But I just fell in love with it when I visited. I had family in the area, Birmingham area, not too far away. So grew up watching SEC football, and it was hard to turn down once I visited Auburn.
Would you tell your parents, like, what's that conversation for a young
Dan?
It'll be like, listen, Mom and Dad, I know that Roll Tide is kind of the name of the game here, but
yeah, no, they, I mean, they were all for
it.
They were like, you know, if you get a scholarship and we all have to pay for school, we don't care where you go, you know, we just want you to go wherever you want. And so, you know, they were really excited. I had some other, you know, relative cousins and grandparents that weren't quite as happy for me, but you know, they still had a lot of fun, and we had a lot of fun messing around, you know, between the Auburn, Alabama stuff.
And now since your brother's there, you guys are essentially like an Auburn family pretty
much,
right?
I know. Yeah, it's pretty funny. So you know, we have a lot of fun. The Iron Bowl's always right after Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving, we always get the family together in that Birmingham area and stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of trash talk around the table.
Has McCarron given you a hard time?
Yeah, we've had a little, you know, a couple exchanges here and there. And unfortunately, you know, we lost this year. So, you know, hopefully we'll be around next year, and we can get some revenge.
The past month or so, though, I mean, you've really been locked in, 9 of 10, haven't missed a field goal, or excuse me, an extra point attempt. I mean, what's really, obviously things don't work out the way that you want them in Minnesota, but since you've gotten here, I mean, what's the difference been for you? Is it comfort? Is it just...
You know, it's a lot of things. You know, I think my technique, there's some things I was able to improve after getting cut and having a couple of weeks, you know, where I was able to work on some things that you can't really do in the middle of a season just because, you know, you're always getting ready for the game day and stuff. And so I was able to take a step back, kind of regroup. And then, you know, I think mentally I always felt good. But, you know, now I'm definitely getting kind of in a groove here where, you know, I have a lot of confidence going forward. And, you know, at the same time, you got to handle each rep and each kick, whether it's practice or a game, just like any other kick, you know, whether you had missed the one before or whether you had made 8 or 9 in a row before that.
So is it kind of just like being a golfer, a different kind of athlete, just kind of being in the zone and feeling, yeah, you know, feeling good and everything clicking?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot different than, you know, so many other positions, yeah, in football. And that, I think that's what kind of makes it cool. And, you know, you'll have quarterbacks that kind of get on hot streaks, I think, sometimes. And I think sometimes it happens with kicking. But, you know, for me, it's just about taking it one rep at a time and helping out the team however I can.
So if I did my homework correctly, you also punted at Auburn too, right?
Yeah.
So does that make you our de facto emergency punter in case something happens
so,
to Johnny?
You know, I think so, unless there's some big lineman that surprisingly has a huge leg. But I think that would be down to me.
So is Johnny then the emergency kicker? Can Johnny kick? Because
I don't really know, because I don't know who would hold then too.
Oh, so, that's a good point.
You know, maybe one of the quarterbacks would hold, and I would guess we'd probably go for it on an extra yeah, point or maybe fourth down. I don't know. So, you know, Lord willing, that won't happen.
I'm curious too. I'm sure you've been asked about it a lot, but when you come in here for the tryout or whatever, and obviously Coach Bisaccia and Coach Gruden, everyone liked what they saw. But what does a kicking tryout look like in the middle,
yeah,
of the season?
Yeah.
Is it, do they send you out there and say, hey, pal, let's go? You got 10 shots?
Yeah,
or?
Basically, you know, each one's different. But for me, it was just me out there. You know, Trent and Johnny were both out there with me just to get live snaps and stuff. So basically, we just started kicking and backing and up and zigzagging around the field. And then I got some kickoffs as well. And yeah, it's a little, you know, you get a little pressure, nothing like game day, but there's a group of, you know, the GM, the coaches, they're all kind of circled right behind you, and you know, you can feel them watching you, obviously, but it's good because obviously you're going to have them watching you in the games too. They're going to be on the sidelines, so it's good to kind of get that feel for pressure again.
Do you get any like feedback, like when you kick a good one, is there like a clap, or is it just onto the, is it like a silent, like,
I think
in a library?
Yeah, it's pretty silent.
Oh.
You know, it's like it's, yeah, there's no golf claps or anything like that, but yeah, it's pretty silent. That, you know, someone's instructing you, hey, put the ball here, this is where the next one is. But yeah, I mean, obviously it went well, and we talked for quite a bit with coaches and the GM and stuff after, so it obviously went well enough, so I'm here, and I'm very happy to be here.
Does Johnny at least dap you up after a good kick? Or?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, those guys are kind of, you know, on my side for that, so it was good.
I just have this vision of you just, like, kicking out there alone in front of Reggie and Coach, and then just moving around. Oh, well, I'm glad at least Johnny gave you some
yes,
love.
Yes, yeah. And Johnny and Trent did a good job.
Speaking of, though, I was thinking about this. I can't imagine there's another tandem in the NFL where the younger brothers – do the exact same thing as like the older. So like,
yeah, I know.
Your younger brother is the kicker at Auburn. Johnny's younger brother is the kicker at Florida.
Yeah,
like
that's rare. Yeah, that is very rare. And so it's fun, you know, getting to watch those guys kind of grow up and, you know, playing for the teams that we used to play for and playing the SEC and stuff. So it's been a lot of fun.
I was looking at it too, because I saw that you retweeted something about your brother's like 50-yarder or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, bro, you guys look so similar.
I know. We get that a lot.
Really?
We get that
so
a lot.
Do people
yep,
think you're twins?
I think so. You know, I think a lot of people probably in Auburn are still confused on why I'm still in Auburn. You know, they probably think I just changed my number. But, you know, we look the exact same, especially in shoulder pads and helmet.
That's crazy, because I was looking, I was like, I was like, wait, because I did the same thing where I thought it was like a tweet from like last year.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, it's your brother.
Yep.
That's is him. He as tall as you too?
He's he's 6'4", 6'5". So he's probably gonna pass me here in a year or two.
Are you good? You have tall parents too, I'd assume?
Yeah. Yeah. My dad was a 6'4" Swedish tennis player. So that's where we take after the looks, is we got that blonde hair and tall frame for sure.
Our PR guy Cam was telling me, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but he's saying that you can dabble in Swedish a little bit. Is that true?
Yeah, yep. I lived in Sweden for a year in eighth grade, 2008, and grew up kind of visiting over there in my summers and stuff. So yeah, my dad still speaks Swedish to us all the time. So I'm losing it a little because I don't speak it as much anymore, but and still dabble in it.
Okay, what's like a go Raiders in Swedish?
Hey, yeah, Raiders.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the translation for Raiders is, but yeah. You know, they actually have a Swedish Raiders fan club.
Oh, that's pretty dope.
They've reached out to me and stuff.
Oh, you got to do something with them.
Yeah, no, I would hope to, you know, one day visit them or something if I ever go to Sweden.
That's cool. What's the best Swedish food out there?
Can't beat Swedish meatballs. Yeah. I think that's kind of my go-to. They eat a lot of fish and potatoes too, so it's very healthy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, shoot. All right, we'll get you out of here on this because I know you're busy, but we hear so oftentimes about whether it's kickers or quarterbacks or golfers, you know, that they're super superstitious about like their routine, what they listen to, what they don't listen to. Do you have any like funky superstitions? Or you just roll rock and roll?
Yeah, I can't say that I have anything super weird. You know, I'm a religious guy, and so you know, I think that's my big thing.
Sure.
Is you know, I say a quick prayer and you know, listen to some worship music while all the other guys are listening to rap and getting kind of hyped up. I'm kind of calm, staying calm, and you know, just getting ready for those big pressure moments.
But you're not one of those dudes who's worn like the same shoes for 9 years or something.
No, definitely
like that.
Not. Definitely not.
Cool. Well, hey man, I appreciate you stopping by. I know we were just saying you're a media star now. It's like being back at Auburn. Everyone wants a little piece.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you hanging out, man, and we'll good luck on Sunday. We'll catch up with you soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yo, big shout out to Daniel Carlson for stopping by and hanging out with us, man. It's like I said, a good dude, you find yourself rooting for, and a guy who, like we talked about earlier, can hopefully provide some much needed consistency at that kicking spot. So we move on to everyone's favorite segment, to our favorite segment, our still unsponsored segment. So who do we shout out this week, Trav? McDonald's, Suavecito, anyone you want to shout out for?
Let's go Taco Bell.
Taco Bell. Yeah. Live Moss. And we're going to live Moss as we go to victory formation, our usual wrap up to the pod each week. So Eddie Pascal, producer Trav, and we're joined as per usual by senior esports / fashion correspondent / executive director of college analysis and film review, the great Kyle Martin Media. Kyle, welcome.
Eddie, good morning. Actually, you know what? Not good morning, because what I'm assuming this pod will go out in the evening sometime.
Yeah,
so good evening to all.
Yes.
And,
so actually, Kyle, before we get really into it, I'm curious. We had the great Marcel Reese on Raiders Live with Chris Townsend and myself earlier this week. And it kind of brought up this conversation that we had, because Marcel obviously lit the torch the other day. Of guys that you think should light the torch.
That are worthy?
Yeah, guys or girls, sorry. You know, we're very inclusive here.
Do they have to be Raiders?
I mean, we asked Jim Plunkett this question. We said, Plunk, who do you think should light the torch? And his first option was Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah, that was a curveball.
Yeah,
he definitely
threw a curveball at us. Also, happy birthday to Plunk. It was his birthday earlier this week. Some great hashtag content on Raiders.com surrounding that momentous occasion. But yeah, we asked Plunk. I was like, Plunk, who do you think should light the torch? Because he's obviously done it. And his choice was Condoleezza Rice. So
not one I would have pulled out of the hat.
Certainly not. So who's your selection?
I think the easiest choice would just be to have Wood come back and do it. I mean, Charles Woodson is the ultimate Raider.
Sure.
And he has yet to light the torch. So let's book it. Let's get him in here. But it has to be on a game that's deserving of the greatness of Charles Woodson.
Yeah.
You know, like it would have to be
the Super Bowl.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's really what it should be. But
okay. In all seriousness, though, when we were to play for a Super Bowl, who would light that torch?
Oh boy, maybe
would
every,
we even
maybe every Raider ever
would we have a would we have a torch lighting in that situation? Because it technically wouldn't be a home game.
It would be if it was a home game. It would be the first time an NFL team has played in a Super Bowl in their home stadium. So that would be a history in the making for several reasons.
I don't think they'd let you do it, though. I think because the NFL kind of
The old no
regulates.
Fun league. I was too nice to the NFL last week, applauding them for their My Cause, My Cleave stuff. I got to go back to my roots.
But see, hold on. Really quick, though. If I mean, the NFL obviously recognizes the historic, like how great the Raiders are in the history of the league. And that's, you know, the torch has become a piece of Raiders, you know, history. So I feel like they would have to honor that, right?
But only if it's in Las Vegas Stadium.
Yeah.
I don't think they would do it at Raymond James Stadium or something.
No. Yeah, it would be our stadium, and it would be under our terms.
Well, who gets it? Who gets to light it then? I mean, that's the real question.
I think it would have to be a communal thing. It'd have to be like Raiders alumni, you know?
That's a good choice.
Long to go back up there. Some Jim Plunkett, some former Super Bowl champions in honor of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You could do the Super Bowl MVPs.
Freddie B. Plunk and Old Marcus.
I can see it now, just hand in hand, raising them together as the torch goes up in flame.
Be beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So who would be your, sorry Kyle, I know we got distracted. Who's your current torchlighter?
Charles Woodson.
See Wood, that's right.
Yeah.
Mine would be the great Eldrick Tiger Woods.
Mm.
Get the tiger out here, get him to light that torch. Speaking of Plunk, he's a huge Plunkett fan, obviously a Stanford Cardinal, but I think Tiger would be my guy, man. A guy who's back, who's a true Raider through and through, baby.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Let's get Tiger out here. Dude, that would get the people going, too.
It would, but you know what else would? Is Josephine Scriver, the Victoria's Secret model, who's also a very outspoken Raiders fan.
Yeah, proud member of the nation. Yeah,
as
be a good one.
As well as many others. You know, there's a lot of celebrities that are Raiders fans.
That's true.
Has Cube done it?
Has Cube done it? That's a good question. We'll have to circle back with Lorenzo on that one.
I would love, Damian Lillard would be a cool one to get to light the torch.
Dame Dalla would be cool.
Oakland's own. Damian.
Speaking of Oakland Zone, a real quick shout out to Marshawn for we announced today he's our 2018 Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year Award nominee. So shout out the Beast. And I know I'm the broken record of these guys never get enough credit for the stuff they do off the field. But Marshawn is the ultimate guy for that, where we think about all the great stuff he does on the field, and he's immensely entertaining off the field. But, dude, I mean, Trav and I have been privy to, you know, it's a story for another day, but some of the stuff that he really does off the field that never gets enough shine. And he's an incredibly thoughtful, compassionate dude who obviously cares a lot about his community. And yeah, shout out to the Beast.
Yeah, this is his backyard.
Yeah, man. That's one thing that's really cool too, like to literally end up wrapping up your career. And if who knows if this is the end for Marshawn. I've given up trying to predict what this guy's going to do. But if this is really the end or it's not, but to have a portion of your NFL career to go back and play for your hometown and to play really, really well, like, that's cool, man. That's like the dream, essentially.
Storybook ending.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like me, if I was playing, you know, if I was a stretch four for the Warriors, you know?
Oh, my goodness. All right, Beadrins.
Shout out to Andres Beadrins. I'm a man who owns two jerseys. I know you know this, Kyle. I own two jerseys. I'm not a big jersey guy. I don't really believe in them, but I own two. I own a Nick Van Exel Warriors jersey and an Andres Beadrins Warriors jersey. Those are my two.
I respect the Nick Van Exel jersey.
Nicky V, baby, a great Laker.
Yep.
A greater Warrior, but a great Laker.
Yeah, I mean, California unite.
You a jersey guy, Kyle?
I have a few, but they're pretty much, well, I do have, shout out to all the Giants fans that are going to hate on me for this, but I have a Yasiel Puig jersey.
Oh, my God.
Which I love dearly and would fly outside my home if I could. But I also have...
Well, that jersey will never win a championship. So.
Subtle jab. I also have a Kobe jersey, Shaq, Magic, and Marcus Mariota when he was an Oregon Duck.
Well, technically, you have a number 8 jersey.
Yeah,
you don't have
his name.
You don't have
it.
A Mariota jersey. You have a number 8 jersey.
Yeah, I purchased it, though, when Mariota donned the number 8. Yeah.
See, at least what's good is you can claim it as a Masoli jersey, too, if you wanted to.
I suppose.
I mean, not that you would, but.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Who wears number 8 for the Ducks right now?
Oh, I don't know.
Right now?
I couldn't tell you. Also, unfortunately for us, but we're not going to go to, they're coming to our backyard.
Yeah, Levi's
Stadium.
In
the Red Box Bowl, in another humiliating bowl. Dude, all right, let me real quick aside. Look, I'm all for bowl season. I love bowl season. I think it's a lot of fun. Obviously the more college football, the better. And I actually got really sad. I had like a sad boy moment the other day where I realized on Saturday that college football is like essentially almost over. Like the quote-unquote college football Saturday is over because we have Army-Navy this Saturday, but it's not like the full slate of games. And then you just go into like bowl season where it's like 3 on a Tuesday, 5 on a Saturday, you know what I mean? And they like bum me out. But like I said, I love bowl season, but we got to do better with these names, man. The fact that we have a Cheez-It Bowl and a Red Box Bowl
and a Foster Farms
and a Foster Bowl. Farms Bowl. Like, come on. The Cheez-It Bowl?
Come on, man. Where is the Cheez-It Bowl?
I don't know.
Who's playing in the Cheez-It Bowl?
I'm going to look this up, but there is a Cheez-It Bowl is humiliating. Like, what's the trophy for the Cheez-It Bowl? That's what I want to know.
A golden box of Cheez-Its.
Dude, like, you always hear about, like, these, like, the swag bags that these kids get when they go to the, speaking of the devil, Cal's playing in the Cheez-It Bowl on Espen. What's our location?
Should be the stadium.
It's
or
in
the
Phoenix.
City. So, like, it should be what the Phoenix Bowl, or, like, whatever.
Well, like, it should make sense, like, the Desert Bowl, you know, something like that.
X-Bowl sponsored by
that's so much better. The Cheez-It Bowl? Come on, man. Come on.
Oh, man.
Like, actually, you know what we're going to do, since we've already gone off the rails a little bit? I'm just going to look up the list of bowl games and see and see how many humiliating ones there are. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous.
This might be my favorite aside we've gone on. Just a random tangent. God.
This is unreal. Unreal.
It's so relatable, too, because everyone's thinking it.
Yeah, man. Let's see. College football bowl schedule. Here we are. Okay, well, the national championship, all that stuff. That's great. That's great. Okay. Here we go. Starting on Jan 1, we have the Citrus Bowl. That's fine. Outback Bowl. I'll allow that. Sun Bowl. That's fine. Then the Tax Slayer Bowl, the Holiday Bowl, which makes sense. Like, that's a good one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that is a good one.
Liberty Bowl, I'll allow that, too. The Red Box Bowl, which Mighty Oregon's playing in. All right, I take umbrage with this, that the Military Bowl, you know who's playing in the Military Bowl? Cincinnati and Virginia Tech. Then, okay, the Arizona Bowl, which is in Arizona, that's fine. The Belk Bowl, lame. Alamo Bowl. I'll allow it. Camping World.
Boo.
Music City Bowl. That makes sense because it's in Nashville. That's how it's supposed to be. That makes sense. Texas Bowl. Houston. Pinstripe Bowl. Independence Bowl. Oh, boy. Here we go. Here we go. The Cheez-It Bowl. The Quick Lane Bowl. The First Responder Bowl. The Dollar General Bowl. The Idaho Potato Bowl, the Bahamas Bowl, the Gasparilla Bowl, the Camellia Bowl, the Cure Bowl, and then the New Mexico Bowl, which makes
and
sense.
And Bowl
it's in New
Bowl.
Mexico. Yeah, Bowl Bowl. Shout out to Bowl Bowl as well. That is absurd. That is absurd. That is absurd and unacceptable.
File a grievance. Write a letter.
Dude, I am going to file a grievance.
Put it in writing.
My God, the Cheez-It Bowl. The Trav, is USC Bowl eligible this year?
No. No. We wish we could play in the Cheez-It Bowl.
Goodness gracious. Mamma mia. All right. To the Steelers, if anyone still cares. man, all right, Cal. Big Ben's a beast, an absolute monster. We get it. He's huge. He looks like a middle linebacker with a big arm. How do you take this man down behind the line of scrimmage?
You got to limit his – oh, take him down behind the line of scrimmage? Oh, boy. Well, he's got a pretty decent offensive line, no doubt about that. I think it just comes down to – with Big Ben, because he's got such quick receivers, you know, as we know, pass rush and sacks haven't been our strong suit this season.
Certainly not.
But we have to create ways to prevent him from getting the ball out quick or having time to really look downfield. Because whether it's a quick slant or just a hook route, I mean, Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster can torch anyone at any given moment, whether it's just a 5 yard in or anything, you know? So preventing him from making those quick passes, jamming the receivers at the line of scrimmage, and doing something that, you know, requires him to move in the pocket, make him a little uncomfortable, that will be the key.
Actually, I'm glad you brought up those two, because per our senior director of public relations and friend of the program, Will Kiss, I do my weekly hit with our friend Jason Dumas for Cron, and you know, he always gives me some talking points because he's a master public relations man. And he was telling me today, he was filled with a bunch of good tidbits, but that Juju and AB are the only two teammates that both have over 1,000 yards already. So yikes.
Yeah, I mean, they're monsters for sure. I was actually shocked to hear that Juju leads that team in receiving yards.
He does. AB's got him in touchdowns.
With 12, right?
Yeah, okay. And he's got the most in the NFL in terms of receiving touchdowns. But yeah, Juju is... he's feasting, man.
Dude, at USC, I mean, Trav, you watched the guy. I knew he was a stud.
I didn't think he was this sick.
No, I did not either.
Yeah,
I didn't think he would catch on as much as he has. Like, he was good at USC, but...
because look at, like, you know, you see other USC receivers, too, like Marquise Lee and guy. I don't know, just they just don't pan... Robert Woods is a stud for the Rams. He's
Bob
good.
Woods.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're not at Juju level. Juju has taken over and...
he's like that Lynn Swan
level.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy about Juju is that obviously you look at his numbers, but like I think that he's, and this is not like breaking news or anything, but he gets like the benefit of playing behind AB. So like even when he puts up like stupid numbers, he kind of does it quietly, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because everyone's just like, oh, look at this crazy, crazy stuff that AB's up to. But you forget about Juju and what a monster he is. Because I had the same thing where I was going through the numbers this week. Like, oh, man, Juju's actually leading them in receiving yards? Like, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. The thing I always think about with guys like Juju, though, is that, you know, with guys like Ben Roethlisberger who are in the latter stages of their career.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see how he'll do with whoever
a normal quarterback.
As opposed, you know, where DeAndre Hopkins has had 5 quarterbacks and he's been a stud with every single one of them.
Yeah.
That's just the dude that he is. But
Hopkins or AB? Who you got?
Hopkins. I think AB is a game breaker. I think he can just, in a moment, I mean, DeAndre Hopkins can do that too. I don't know. I like Hopkins. I think Antonio Brown.
Hopkins is a beast.
Is probably a more complete receiver.
Yeah.
In terms of route running.
I mean, it's pretty crazy to hear Coach Gruden kind of put him in that Jerry Rice echelon earlier this week. Like, I obviously knew, like, we all know AB's a monster, but to hear Grudog say, like, hey, like, I've seen Jerry, and I've, like, he's in that conversation. That's one of those, like, oh. Like, from a guy who would know, like, that's pretty high praise.
It's crazy to think, too, that AB was a 6th-round pick, I believe, just waiting, just in the back of the draft.
I would love to one day have a conversation with Reggie or Coach or something about how these guys end up slipping that far. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's unreal that teams passed on AB 6 times. You know what I mean?
All 32 of them.
6 times. Well, I guess the Steelers technically 5 times. But, like, I'd be curious. It's a conversation for another day. But who the Steelers' picks were ahead of AB in that draft. And I can't imagine any of them have been more productive than him.
No, I can't. I mean, at the receiver position, I can't imagine they have been either. But, I mean, look at Jalen Richard. He's another one of the guys that's we've picked up that's undrafted. Not to compare him to Antonio
Brown. Course not,
but yeah, to your point, it's amazing to see how these guys just slip under the radar. Philip Lindsay in Denver, who's having an outstanding season.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, man, because all these high-round draft guys don't always pan out. Yeah. It's just a crapshoot.
Yeah, it just goes to show you. I mean – and it actually kind of plays into, thankfully, our hand now, where there is a bit of luck involved, I think, in the draft. And, I mean, the most valuable commodity you can have in the draft, whether it's the 1st round or the 7th round, it's just picks. And, I mean, we have 3 in the 1st round this year. We have 2 in the 1st round next year. I mean, like you said, I mean, the plan is to hit on all of them, right? But at some point you're playing the odds. And, you know, having those picks is a luxury that literally no other team in the NFL has right now.
Absolutely. It'll be a good – back to the game. It'll be a good matchup this weekend.
Yeah, 100%.
I hope so. I'm excited.
100%. Yeah, me too. Sounds like the weather's going to cooperate a little bit for us, so that'll be good. And then we're off to the cold weather games for the final stretch here. But I'm going to steal my Dumas line. I did it last week with you, Kyle. We're going to win on Sunday if?
If we can like I said last week with the Chiefs, if our offense can keep up with the high-flying Steelers offense, I think – it'll be a game. I mean, look, we put up 33 against the Chiefs. No one expected us to win that game, let alone put up.
Yeah, take them to the wire.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if we can be in the same stride as them, I think it'll be a good contest.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, you bring up a great point where going toe-to-toe with them, I mean, you're going to have to, as much as it pains me, field goals aren't going to get it done on Sunday. You need tutties. But I think for me, it's if you keep Derek safe. I mean, we talk about it a lot where you look at what Derek did on Sunday, obviously the three sacks. But, I mean, outside of those three sacks, I mean, he by and large had a lot of time to work, and he picked apart that Chiefs defense at times. And another Will Kiss nugget, the Steelers have more sacks than anyone in the NFL. So they're going to do it in a lot of ways. They're going to bring a lot of exotic looks. They're going to do, you know, everything they can to kind of take down Derek behind the line of scrimmage. But if Brandon Parker can step up, if Colton can kind of keep playing well, and those big dogs in the middle can keep eating, give Derek time to work, I mean, I think that's going to be it. I think that's going to be the key. I mean, give Derek time to work. Let him survey the field and, you know, keep that run game going, right? I mean, two of the past 3 weeks, the Raiders have gone well over 100 yards on the ground. And like I said, the past month, really, they've been running the ball really effectively. Like we said, we're not really sure how much we're going to get out of Doug this weekend, but you got C.J. Anderson, Jalen went for nearly 100 on, what, 6 carries the other day. So, I mean, things are there. Things are trending in the right direction, and I think that, I mean, for us, obviously, we talk about it a ton, but it feels like something has turned a little bit the past week or two. I think that Sunday especially, you kind of saw, okay, this is what it could be. You know, obviously we're not there yet, and you're not 2-9 on accident or 2-10 now. But I mean, we saw what it could be, what it should be, what it can be when the pieces really get plugged in here and we start rocking and rolling. But yeah, you brought up a great point, Kyle. It's gonna be a good game, an exciting game, a clash between two historic franchises, which I always enjoy. I always enjoy the old school battles. Wish it was raining, but what can you do? It'll be fun.
I saw it's supposed to be partly cloudy and 59.
Partly cloudy and 59.
I don't know if you'll get your wish, but
yeah, that's all right. That's what we deserve. That's what we'll get. 59. It'll be fun. It'll be a good game. So, Raider Nation, keep listening. Keep hollering at us. We like hanging out with you guys. And, yeah, it's going to be a good one on Sunday. For Eddie Pascal, Kyle Martin, producer Trav, engineer Jim, and the great Daniel Carlson, thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll catch you guys next week on Upon Further Review.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network.